This is Matt Spiegel, and we are off and running with Season 2 of the PBP, Voices of Baseball. The very best play-by-play voices in the game talk about their craft. Hear guests like Joe Davis explain the thought process during baseball's biggest games.
You gotta widen the lens. What does this home run mean?
Harper, the swing of his life!
Incredible broadcasters sharing great stories from your favorite teams with new episodes weekly. Find us on the Odyssey app or wherever you find podcasts.
All righty, hour number two of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. New Syracuse quarterback Kyle McCord going to stop by 40 minutes from now. Coming up in hour number three at 5:20 p.m. Eastern, 2:20 p.m. Pacific from the UConn basketball team. Their star Donovan Klingon will join us. We are off to Arizona as a show. Coming up tomorrow, early morning flight. There is some big-time rain in the New York City area. And we are cutting it close. We are taking an early morning flight tomorrow. We're hoping it gets out on time. Once we land, we will dash to the affiliate we're doing the show from on Wednesday. And hopefully everything will be on time. Hopefully there won't be delays. If there are delays, maybe we won't be on the air tomorrow. But we do plan and should be on the air tomorrow. And then Thursday and Friday, we'll be at the Westwood One NCAA Tournament Final Four, Men's Final Four Radio Row, where we will have a plethora of guests with college basketball coaches, former college basketball players. It will be a who's who's in the men's game that will be joining us live on Radio Row Thursday and Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern, noon to 3 p.m. Pacific. Now, I do wonder if Eric Musselman will be at the Final Four. Now, there's always that coaches conference that goes on, so all the coaches are there. But the reason why I say Eric Musselman, the head coach of Arkansas and the Must Bus, because the Must Bus could be on the move. Now, Andy Enfield did leave USC, which was a little surprising, and he's been fine as the head coach of USC. But when you go on one of these great runs in the NCAA tournament, it feels like the next job, like the big job that you get, doesn't always work out to the way that we think it's going to. Like, Enfield was fine at USC after that great run that he had. Remember him as the coach of Dunk City with Florida Gulf Coast. You look at like Porter Moser, who they were going to be a tournament team and then they missed out the tournament. They were dreadful down the stretch, but he did go from Loyola Chicago eventually to Oklahoma. You know, Larrañaga, it took him forever to leave George Mason, but he's been a player at Miami and he's brought Miami basketball to a good level, and he was in the Final Four a year ago. And you had that kid, Isaiah Wong, who was just phenomenal on the basketball court for them and a few others. But a lot of times when, like Shaka Smart, remember him at VCU and then Texas? There was nothing great at Texas, and now he's had more success at Marquette. So for a lot of these coaches that have great success in the NCAA tournament, that is kind of unheard of or comes out of nowhere, like they haven't been disasters at their next job, at their first big job. But it's not as if they've gone on to these legendary heights and have gone on to these great careers. Now, Eric Musselman has been a coaching legend. Legend's too strong of a word. But he's been a part of the coaching community for a long time. And we've seen him coach in the NBA. We've seen him coach in college. And when he was at Nevada, he had a lot of energy. And we saw him have success and get to the NCAA tournament. Yeah, the two Martin twins, remember them? And now, you know, he's been successful at Arkansas. But USC opens up. You know, Arkansas is in the SEC. SC is moving to the Big Ten, and that's going to start this upcoming season, right? Football in the fall, as you have the conference shift and all conference realignment is out of sync. And USC is a big brand, and it would be a fine move. Here's the other thing, too, about this, though. What about the Bronny James factor in this? Because we know Musselman has an NBA background. We know Musselman is a great promoter. That's also kind of the undercovered part of Andy Enfield leaving, where everyone's like, okay, you leave USC to go to SMU. Maybe he kind of thought it was similar to what did transpire with Shaka. When Shaka left Texas to go to Marquette, it's like you hear the writing is on the wall. You know that it's not going to work. It's not going to go to the heights that you thought. So maybe you try to go somewhere else and get out a little bit earlier rather than a year or two too late when they are firing you. Like, remember, hey, Porter Moser denied this, but Porter Moser, there was some thought that he was going to go to DePaul, and it was like, you're going to leave Oklahoma to go to DePaul? Why would you do that? And eventually Holtman, coming over from Ohio State, once he got axed, he ended up getting the DePaul job. But Musselman, I don't think he's in danger of losing his job, but I wonder if maybe Musselman says, let me go to USC, right, as they embark on this new journey in the Big Ten, and let me latch on to maybe the last year of Bronny James. And I know, right, obviously it's weird to talk about Bronny James. Like, I've always found it weird to talk about Bronny James when he was in high school. Because, like, I felt the same way about Arch Manning. But once you go to college, I think it's fair game to talk about them more. But then you also have the sensitivity with the heart issue that happened to Bronny James a year ago, almost a year ago. And then you have the also story of LeBron wanting his son to be on the same team as him, but we don't know if Bronny wants that. With USC not making the tournament this year, and USC season's now being over the last few weeks, Stu, we have not heard much about the future of Bronny James, where there was this thought he could be one and done. I don't think he's going to be one and done. And maybe then you start to hear LeBron the other night also speculate about his retirement, where he's like, the end is not that far away like people make it out to be. He didn't put an exact time, but he made it seem like it was sooner rather than later. And LeBron turns 40 in December. And I said this yesterday, I think LeBron's going to play one more season. But if Bronny, let's say, returns to USC, maybe gets Muss as his head coach, as according to On3, Arkansas head coach Eric Musselman is set to interview with USC tomorrow. And that was about like 30 minutes ago that was put out there by Scott Schrader, who is the analyst and head publisher of WeAreSC.com and On3 USC. Maybe they kind of line that up where, you know, LeBron is so much about his image, where LeBron made it clear he wants his son on his team. Maybe the son doesn't want it. So Bronny goes back for another year. Maybe Muss is his head coach. You get a little NBA experience in there too. Not that really Bronny James needs any help for NBA experience when his father is his teacher, right? It's his dad and LeBron James, one of the greatest basketball players of all time. And maybe that's the out that LeBron has, where LeBron could be still in the NBA and Bronny could be on another team. I get that. But if you want to end your career, you feel like you're not going to win another championship, maybe you re-sign with the Lakers this year for one more year. You play out this year, and then your son bypasses his third year in college basketball. And after this year, after one more season of college basketball, he walks off into the pros. But I wonder more about the Andy Enfield part, about why he took the SMU job. Did he feel like it was almost going to be coming to an end at USC? I'm not speculating that maybe LeBron wanted Andy out. I don't know what that is, but it's just one of those things where it was kind of a move that raised an eyebrow, and no one talked about the Bronny James factor. And I don't think, Stu, you know, you correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think Bronny James is going to declare for the NBA draft in the next few weeks. I'd kind of be surprised at that by this point.
Yeah, I agree. We've heard like nothing on that. And I feel like if he was, we probably would have heard something, some speculation about it. But it does feel kind of quiet at this point. And yeah, that kind of would make a lot of sense, having a guy like Musselman come in. And I know he's done a very nice job. He's had a very good career. And he went to San Diego, so it'd be kind of like a homecoming for him, mm-hmm. of sorts. Has the NBA experience as a coach. So yeah, I think from all parties, that would kind of make sense. I definitely think Bronny would stay a second year. Yeah. I can't imagine him coming out.
So maybe that's why it's not a story, because most people expect it, you know, him to return. But with how much of a story it was when he was in high school, and even this first year of college, where LeBron really laid into, he'll go to USC and then, okay, we'll link up together in the NBA and that's my dream. It's crazy how talked about that was. And then you fast forward just a year later. I know there was a health issue, obviously, so I want to be sensitive to that. But a year later, I think most people say, probably behooves Bronny to stay another year. And it hasn't. You haven't even heard a peep about the future of Bronny James, and you just had the coach change at USC. Because usually people would be doing like the windy fingers, right? And they'd be like, oh, Andy takes the SMU job. Bronny's still at USC. Like, what does that mean? What does that tell you? And we've heard nothing. Been radio silence on the Bronny James front. So at this point, like, my jaw would hit the floor if we find out that Bronny is going to the NBA. I'm talking about this offseason. And if that's the case, I think then Bronny is in on him teaming up with his dad wherever that next home is, wherever someone drafts him. But if he returns, it feels like that dream of being on the same team with your son is dead, because how many more years can LeBron really play? Like, he still plays at an incredibly high level, but we've seen his body in L.A. It's weird to say break down because he's such in a pristine condition, but we've seen him miss larger stretches of basketball than we've ever seen before in Cleveland and Miami, then back to Cleveland, and now being with the Lakers.
Yeah, I feel like when he was with the Heat and the Cavs both
never
times,
missed.
He was like never injured. And even the first year he got to the Lakers, he missed a large chunk of times, and they missed the playoffs. And you're right, it seems like almost every year. Honestly, this year is probably, I think he might have been the most healthy this year. But yeah, pretty much every year he's had an injury that has kept him out for at least a few weeks here and there.
Yeah, and it just once again shows you, we get accustomed now because of the TB12 method. We think everyone is going to be able to play into their mid-40s. That just doesn't happen. That's an anomaly. And Brady got injured, his big injury, kind of in the middle-ish of his career, because that was 2007. And after that, he never suffered a serious major injury that missed
any
time.
And that was also a freak injury. That wasn't like him.
Bernard Pollard.
Yeah, a guy fell into him. So it's not even like.
That dude injured every Patriot.
Yeah.
It wasn't dirty.
No, but it was
but
bad.
But yeah, he was like crawling on the floor basically and knocked Brady's leg out. And that was coming off the Super Bowl loss where they ended up being 18-1. Oh, that was a miserable day. And Brady walked off the field on his own power, which is always crazy. Like, you tear your ACL and you walk off your field on your own power. It's wild to me. And that kind of gave people maybe a little hope, a little false hope, that it wasn't as bad as what we thought. And then the next day it came out that, yeah, it was as bad as you thought. It was a torn ACL. Yeah, I remember Wentz. We haven't mentioned Carson Wentz a while on this show. Did you see where Carson Wentz signed yesterday?
I sure did, yeah.
Kansas
How about
City
that?
Chiefs.
How about that?
Does Mahomes get hurt at all, and then you see Carson Wentz gets this redemption journey, and then Perloff becomes insufferable? Because it's weird. The people that Perloff, like, love, it's amazing to me how he loves, seriously loves, Carson Wentz. And Wentz, I used to be a fan of, and then you kind of realized he was a phony, and you kind of realized he was a fraud, and everything he preached, he didn't practice it. And I do have a minuscule amount of sympathy for Carson Wentz just because of the injuries. But for Perloff, especially as an Eagle fan, and you expect, like Eagles fans usually be bitter, and they have a chip on their shoulder, and they hold it against people that screwed over the franchise. It's kind of crazy how much love Perloff still has for Carson Wentz. Like, I saw something yesterday. Perloff is like, if Andy Reid sees something in you, you're still going to go start many more years in the NFL. Like, this idea of Carson Wentz continuing to play in the league as a starter is just crazy to me. Absolutely bonkers to me. But Wentz was one of those players where he had his ACL injury. He still stayed in that game against the Rams, threw a touchdown, and then exited the field, and then you found out the worst had happened. Which, that's crazy to me. I know there's adrenaline, but I don't care who you are. You tear your ACL. That's wild he was able to stay in that game and still deliver a touchdown pass, which was his last pass of the season. I think it was to Jordan Matthews, if memory does serve me right. I could be wrong on that. But the Perloff bizarre love for Carson Wentz, I never got to the bottom of that. Never have, never will. And there's still a piece of that poster still in their office. I thought we shredded that poster and it was donezo. But watch. Ugh, I could just hear it now. Perloff, Mahomes gets hurt in the divisional round. Like what happened a few years ago when Chad Henne came in and threw that nice out pass to Tyreek Hill. Good play called by Bieniemy and Reed. I could see Wentz coming on in, and in that situation, in that environment in Kansas City, maybe having a successful game or two stint, and then Perloff is like, some team's got to go sign Carson Wentz. Like the Carson Wentz part, at this point, you made all the money that you made. Isn't it just time to hang it up? Like, I don't want to be the person that tells someone to retire. And he's still relatively young. But you made all that money. Your body has been through hell and back with all the injuries. Like, you have a wife. I think he has a few kids now. At least one kid. Why don't you just retire? Like, you made it. Yeah, you didn't go on to be what a second pick was supposed to be for a franchise. You had one great season. And that was a season he would have won the MVP if he didn't get hurt. And I know it's tough to move away from your true love of football. But if I'm him, I'd retire at this stage. I don't understand why you want to go through all this anymore, Stu. Like, I really don't.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Like, he signed that $128 million contract. Like, he's made a lot of money when so. I kind of with you. Like, I was actually shocked that he signed. I thought, you know, he's kind of just going to just be sitting there for a year or two and then hang it up. But, hey, I guess the Chiefs see something, and you never know.
I guess when you get to the backup quarterback conversation, like, he's not a bad backup quarterback.
No.
But if he had to go play an entirety of a season, yeah, I'm not feeling great on that one. So
yeah, you could do worse as backup quarterbacks. Like, yeah. I'd take him on the Raiders as a backup.
You would?
I would, yeah.
He could be your starter.
He probably could.
Minshew's, I think, is better at this stage of his career.
Yeah, but I'd rather have Wentz than O'Connell. Even though O'Connell's still young, I don't know.
The Raiders, you know what the Raiders are? The Raiders are depressing.
Of course they are. That's why I'm always depressed.
But the quarterback room is really depressing.
Yeah.
Like, we have to hype ourselves up about Gardner Minshew, who's fun. He's easy to root for. But he's Gardner frickin' Minshew. There's a reason why he's a journeyman quarterback. You think he's your starter week one?
I do. I think that's the way it's trending. I mean, they're going to frame it as a quarterback competition between him and O'Connell. But yeah. And I don't see them trading up.
It's not an actual competition.
It's not. And I don't see them trading up. And I think the quarterbacks are going to go pretty quickly. So I don't think they're going to get their hands on a first-round quarterback. So I think it's going to be Minshew for sure.
Williams is off the board.
Yeah.
So they're going to try, because of the Antonio Pierce connection, to trade up for Jaden Daniels. I don't think that's going to be likely. Do you want Drake May? Like, if they gave... Because what, the Raiders are sitting at 13th?
13, yeah.
If let's say they move up to 3. They swap 3 and 13. The Patriots give you 3. You give them 13 and 2 more future first-round picks. Would you want Drake May for that return?
I feel like at this point I'm kind of backing off of Drake May a little.
Okay.
As a third pick. Like, if he fell into draft, I think that's someone I would think about, but... I don't think you trade up to get him. I think you trade up to get Daniels, and that's about it.
Not J.J. McCarthy.
I would not, no.
No. Not Michael Penix Jr.
No.
Well, you don't have to trade up to get him.
That's why I like, if Penix falls to 13, or maybe they trade up a few picks to like 10 or something like that, mm-hmm. I would take Penix for sure, but
yeah,
I don't know.
By the way, not to poo-poo on Tony Pauline, but I saw he said that there's a lot of buzz that the Patriots have interest in J.J. McCarthy. Let me be abundantly clear. And I love McCarthy at Michigan. I don't think he's going to be a great NFL quarterback. If after all the speculation on who the Patriots quarterback is going to be, if at 3 they take J.J. McCarthy, I'm not going to be happy. I'm not. But I don't buy the Tony Pauline stuff right now, because it's not just Tony. It's anyone right now. I don't know where the root of that report is coming from. And this is lying season. And this is the apex of lying season, because now we're in April. And you don't know who's trying to put that out there to maybe elicit some different response from somebody else to do something in the draft that they normally wouldn't do, or maybe feel like they need to be a little bit extra aggressive in this draft process. But I'm at this point where I want Daniels. I've said I wanted Jaden Daniels for the Patriots. If it's not Jaden Daniels, I'm fine with trading out of the third pick. I think I've already waved the white flag. I wanted Marvin Harrison Jr. If you don't get Daniels, I don't think they're going to do that. But at this point, I think the options have to be one of these three things. The Patriots either get Jaden Daniels, they trade the pick, or they take Drake May. Now, I don't think May's going to a good situation. I wouldn't play him in year one, and that's tough to do. Take a quarterback at 3 and then sit him for a year. But one of those three things have to happen this offseason for the Patriots in the draft. They need to either take Jaden Daniels if he's there. And if they don't take Jaden Daniels if he's there, I think I'm just going to pop a blood vessel. All right? I think I'm going to lose it on the air. But if not, then I think the two options are trade the pick or take Drake May. That's where I'm at kind of with the Patriots draft process. All right, we'll take a break. When we come on back, is Angel Reese hated? We'll hear from some of her teammates next.
This is Matt Spiegel, and we are off and running with Season 2 of the PBP, Voices of Baseball. The very best play-by-play voices in the game talk about their craft. Hear guests like Joe Davis explain the thought process during baseball's biggest games.
You got to widen the lens. What does this home run mean?
The swing of his life!
Incredible broadcasters sharing great stories from your favorite teams with new episodes weekly. Find us on the Odyssey app or wherever you find podcasts.
All righty, this is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We know The biggest story in sports in the last 24 hours was the great matchup between Caitlin Clark of Iowa and Angel Reese of LSU. As you did see Caitlin Clark get her revenge from losing in the championship game a year ago. Iowa off to the Final Four. They'll go up against Paige Beckers, Paige Buckets, as we'll see a little UConn and Iowa in the Final Four. And then you do have South Carolina undefeated in the women's tournament, taking on NC State. In the aftermath of the LSU loss, and the age minimum for the WNBA is 22, so Angel Reese could go to the pros, but she does have another year of eligibility. So that could have been her last college basketball game last night. We don't know. But Angel Reese, in the press conference afterward, gave a very emotional press conference. And as you should, when it could be the end of your college career and how much LSU has meant to her, right? They've called her the Bayou Barbie. And, you know, she's had such a successful career and has done so many things for college basketball. But if you told me that Angel Reese was crying last night in the press conference, I would have thought it would be, and totally normal, because of the loss, and maybe this is the end of her college career. But I didn't think it was going to be about the hate and criticism that she received, and it was really eye-opening last night. So we'll play you that Angel Reese audio right now.
I don't really get to stand up for myself. I have great teammates. I have a great support system. I got my hometown. I got my family that stands up for me. I don't really get to speak out on things just because I just try to ignore and I just try to stand strong. Like, I've been through so much. I've seen so much. I've been attacked so many times. Death threats. I've been sexualized. I've been threatened. I've been so many things, and I've stood strong every single time. And I just try to stand strong for my teammates because I don't want them to see me down and, like, not be there for them. So I just want to always just know, like, I'm still a human. Like, all this has happened since I won the national championship, and I said the other day I haven't had peace since then. And it sucks, but I still wouldn't change. I wouldn't change anything, and I would still sit here and say, like, I'm unapologetically me. I'm going to always leave that mark and be who I am and stand on that. And hopefully the little girls that look up to me, and hopefully I give them some type of inspiration that, no, hopefully it's not this hard and all the things that come at you, but keep being who you are. Keep waking up every day. Keep being motivated, staying who you are, staying 10 toes, don't back down, and just be confident.
So that was really eye-opening, especially the part where she said, since winning the championship, which is the height, right, of her basketball career so far, she hasn't had a peaceful day. Now, naturally, when you're a star, and you're a mega star like she is, because of you play in a sport, 50% of the people are going to love you and 50% of the people are going to hate you. What I think happens here is I don't believe most people hate Angel Reese. And I think she's been praised a ton. Now, on the court, she trash talks, but I have no problem with that. You know, she wears the crown and she placed it down on the bench last night. I have no problem about that. She waved goodbye to players that have fouled out. Like, I have no problem about that. But when we're talking about sports, people get so passionate about sports where then it gives them a platform where there's no checks and balances on social media where they go and attack someone. I'm not saying those things are right, but as someone that's been attacked before on social media, and I understand I don't have the following, I don't have the fame, I don't have the success of an Angel Reese, but I had one person that stalked me once, and I've told that story before, where we had to report it to Spike Eskin, and they got my phone number and nonstop just talking and texting and calling, just nonstop. But then also, like, there's just trolls naturally on social media. And those trolls will never find you when you're out. Those trolls in person, like, most people in Angel Reese in person, I'm sure are like, wow, you're an inspiration. Wow, you're so great. I want to take a photo with you. I want to get a selfie with you. But on social media, and I'm younger, so I have this perspective, you grow up with the phone in the palm of your hand. So it's easy, right, for someone that's 50 or 60 to say, oh, just stay off social media. But that's not how they were brought up. That's not how they were raised, with a phone in their hand. So, like, Angel Reese, what are you going to tell her? Stop going on Instagram? Stop going on Twitter? And even though there's, like, requests and, you know, you could block someone and you could mute someone, there's still ways that that pops up on your feed and you see that. Now, you kind of have to compartmentalize that and you can't let every little thing get you. Most of the time you could ignore it, but there are some days that you let it get to you. And I think that's what's happening there. Like, if you go in the streets and have an interpersonal communication with someone, I think most of her conversation, right, in the streets, out in public, are probably positive. But it's the trolls on social media that probably get to her. And it's easy to say, oh, just dismiss it. But when you're just trying to be you, and you just try to go on Twitter, and you just try to go on Instagram, and you always have that out there, it's part of being successful. It's part of being famous. It's part of being a star. But it doesn't mean it's right. And everyone's human, and one day it could get to you. Now, the death threats are ridiculous. Like, if you're actually sending someone death threats over sports, you're a loser, all right? You should be in jail, too. So let's hear more from Angel Reese's teammates. This is Flauje Johnson. She defends Angel Reese.
Bro, let me tell you something. Everybody can have their opinion on Angel Reese, but y'all don't know her. Like, y'all don't know Angel Reese. I know Angel Reese. I know the real Angel Reese. And the person I see every day is a strong person. Is a caring, loving person, bro. The crown she wears is heavy, bro. She's the type of teammate that's gonna make you believe in yourself. The leap that I took from my freshman to sophomore year, Angel gave me that confidence to go be a dog. Playing next to a dog every day, and you know, just to see how the media ridicule her, went through our problems, but like, this is my sister right here. And I'm so proud of her. Like, the media, y'all, how they like to twist and call her the villain and all of that, y'all don't know Angel, bro. And I'm just happy that I get to play with her. I get to be around her presence. Her energy is different. She just made me a better player. She made me a better player, and that's what great players do.
So outside of the ridiculous article that the LA Times had, where they referred to the LSU basketball team as dirty debutantes, I don't think the media coverage has been that negative about Angel Reese. I once again think this is an issue of trolls and people going after Angel Reese on social media. That's what I truly think this is. But it was interesting to hear Flauje basically say the media is trying to tear her down. And maybe it's because of how fresh the terrible and despicable article was by the LA Times. And right, Kim Mulkey then played into it with the Washington Post story. So when you have your coach basically saying, screw the media, it's not a surprise when the players say screw the media. I'm not saying all media members go about things the right way. I would never say that. But I don't think this is really, from the larger scale thing, a media issue. I think it's more about just trolls that exist on social media. And finally, here is Haley Van Lith, who defend Angel Reese, and they played together this past year.
I'll say something, too. I think, you know, Angel's one of the toughest people I've been around.
Facts.
People speak hate into her life. I've never seen people wish bad things on someone as much as her, and it does not affect her. She comes to practice every day. She lives her life every day. She lives how she wants to live. And she don't let nobody change that. That's the key to life right there. Y'all do not get to her. Let me say it again. Y'all do not get to Angel Reese. So you might want to give it up. Throw the towel in because you're wasting your energy. So Angel's one of the toughest people I've been around.
So this obviously has been an issue that's been brewing, that LSU thought it was important to talk about it when the season did end. I'm not going to sit here and say that I expected this response because I don't feel like Angel Reese is hated from an overall kind of view. You know, everyone's going to have haters when you're that rich and that famous and that successful, right? It's just part of it. But I didn't think that was going to be the press conference that we were listening to last night. But once again, it's not my story to tell. It's not my truth. And you had Haley Van Lith feel that way. You had Flauje Johnson feel that way. And then coming from the source herself, Angel Reese as well. So I just thought it was eye-opening last night when you did go through that. And you did have to hear that. Especially the part where she said, I haven't had a day of peace since winning the championship. All right, this is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll do a little college football fix from Ohio State to Syracuse. We will be joined by Kyle McCord when we return, quarterback on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Update time. Here is the Ackman, Rich Ackerman. 151 days until Syracuse kicks off its football season up against the Ohio Bobcats. Now joining us on a little college football fix on the Zach Gelb Show is a man that played quarterback for Ohio State a year ago, had nearly 3,200 passing yards, 24 touchdowns to 6 interceptions, has since hit the transfer portal, and now will call Syracuse his next home, and that is quarterback Kyle McCord, kind enough to join us on CBS Sports Radio. Kyle, appreciate the time. Thanks so much for doing this. How you been?
I'm good, man. Can't complain.
How do you kind of been acclimating going from Ohio State to now a new home, a new staff, new teammates with the Syracuse Orange men?
Yeah, the transition's been smooth. I think Coach Brown coming from Georgia, which is obviously another top program, he's running it pretty much the same exact way and holding us to that standard. And the rest of the coaches have all had great experience. So the level of excellence and that standard has kind of stayed that high.
The energy is what stands out to me. Like, I knew Fran Brown before a lot of people knew Fran Brown because I'm a Temple graduate, and I know Elijah Robinson as well, who was brought in to be the DC. But the energy of this staff, if I knew what it was years ago, but I'm sure Fran Brown is the same way. How about his energy?
Yeah, I mean, it's off the charts. Extremely genuine dude, and he always brings it every single day. And it's been a lot of competition, and I think that starts with him. I mean, he's going to talk trash and get the guys going, so everyone's kind of rallied around that.
When you look at your transfer portal kind of opportunity that you had to hit this past offseason when you were leaving Ohio State, there was some speculation it was going to be Nebraska, and then you did wind up with Syracuse. Just take me through that entire process.
Yeah, so I got in that first Monday the portal opened. I really had no idea where I was going to end up, and took some visits. Obviously went to Nebraska first, and then visited Syracuse, and then took a step back and weighed my options, and it just made sense to come here. The staff, the situation that I'd be walking into. So it was just something I couldn't say no to.
Talking to Kyle McCord, who joins us right now with the Syracuse football team. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Individually, how do you look back at your season a year ago at Ohio State?
Yeah, I think I'm extremely grateful for the way it went. You know, a lot of highs, a few lows, some big wins, beating Notre Dame and Penn State, and then obviously not the way we wanted to end the year, but I'm thankful for it. I feel like the growth that I went through in a year was tremendous. I feel like from game one to game 12, I got better, played through some injuries and some small stuff like that. So just having that experience under my belt now, I feel like it's huge, and bringing that experience here. And I think I can use everything that I went through last year to catapult me into a great season this year.
When you talk about catapulting yourself into another great season, just how big of a jump do you think you could take, and what have been some of the things you've been working on this offseason?
Yeah, I think you don't know what you don't know. And having 12 games under my belt now and an offseason where you know what you need to work on, you know what's going to show up in the game, you know what's going to get you better, just having that under my belt I think is huge. And it's an advantage, obviously, I didn't have going into last year being a first-year starter. And so now having that experience and that knowledge, I feel like I can really take this thing to the next level.
Now, I know that you've talked about your relationship with C.J. Stroud on social media. We all saw his incredible rookie season. Just what were you able to take from your time with C.J.?
Yeah, I mean, I picked his brain every single day. And seeing the success that he had last year, being a rookie and arguably being a top five quarterback already, was no surprise to me. Just the way he approaches the game. And a lot of it, I think, is just his preparation. I mean, he prepared like no other. You know, he's a film junkie. And so just being able to pick his brain and learning under him for 2 years was awesome. And, you know, just getting the small ins and outs of how he sees the game. So I think that helped me last year. And, you know, that door is still open. I hit him up every now and then, just, you know, shooting, you know, whatever. And he's been awesome.
Talking to Kyle McCord now, it's like an interesting line that you got to toe, because you are the quarterback, but you also are new to this program. There's a lot of people that are new to this Syracuse program. How do you guys now work on building chemistry with the program, with some of the guys that have been there and now some of the newcomers that have stepped in?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting mix. I think a lot of the times when you get a new head coach, all the veteran guys either that have played there or you know, have had success go on and they leave and they go to another school. But that's not the case here. All the veteran guys, all the leaders from last year's team came back. And then Coach Fran brought in a great portal class as well as some freshmen that are going to play early. And so now I think, especially in the spring, is just getting everybody on the same page, gelling as a team. And I think we've been doing a good job. We're ahead of schedule than what I anticipated and where we'd be. And so now it's just all about using that momentum and continuing to roll and get this thing going.
When you learn the offense and you get a better understanding of it and you build those relationships, what can Syracuse football fans expect on the offensive side of the ball this year?
Yeah, I think we have a real possibility to be explosive. Obviously, bringing guys back like Aronda Gadsden and Laquan Allen and Dan Villari and a few of the other receivers, and then bringing in some portal guys like Jackson Meeks and Zeed Haynes from Georgia. I really think, you know, the sky's the limit. And Coach Nixon obviously is the OC, and he's been doing a great job. Been in the NFL for some years, and when he was in college, had some really explosive offenses. So we're all excited, and I think now it's just putting the pieces in the right spot and, you know, putting guys in a position to have success.
talking to Kyle McCord, the new Syracuse quarterback, so many people speculated on why you hit the transfer portal. What was the truth on why you elected to leave Ohio State?
Yeah, I think obviously a lot goes into that. It wasn't on my mind during the season, but once the season ended, sat down, had some conversation about what the future looked like. And, they had a vision on what they wanted to do. And I think I had a vision on what I wanted to do. And, ultimately it didn't pair up. And I think that's just the reality and the business of college football. And, I obviously was in a good situation last year and, I didn't necessarily want to leave. But then once I had those conversations and kind of weighed my options, I felt like it was best for me to go elsewhere. And there's no hard feelings there. I still have a lot of good connections and relationships there. So I wish them all the success this season. But just for me and my career, I felt like the best thing for me to do to really grow as a player was, go to the portal and go elsewhere.
What would have needed to happen to have you stay with the Buckeyes?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's one thing in particular. They obviously went out and got a transfer quarterback, and that was definitely part of the conversation that we had. And, they felt like it was best to turn the page. And, ultimately, I guess, we'll see in the fall if that was the right decision or not. But like I said, I have no ill will. I think that's just the reality of college football nowadays. And, I think it all worked out, and I landed on my feet at a great school in a great situation. So I couldn't have asked for it to play it any different.
Let me ask you about Marvin Harrison Jr. He was the best wide receiver to me in the country last year. Now you hear maybe Malik Nabers may jump him in the draft. I don't care that he didn't participate in the pro day. I don't care that he barely participated in the combine. What's an NFL team getting in your former teammate and Marvin Harrison Jr. whenever you hear his name called?
Yeah, I think you can turn the film and see how good of a player he was. I think every opportunity that he got to step on the field in his past 3 years there, he's dominated. And even this year, coming off a monster season in 2022, teams knew where we were going to try to get the ball, and that was to 18. They tried to double him and, all sorts of ways to stop him, and they couldn't. And he still had a monster year. And so playing with him the past 6 years, 3 years in high school, and then 3 years in college, and just seeing the growth that he's made, there's no doubt in my mind that he's the best receiver in this class.
Getting back to your new team, you said that you feel like the sky is the limit. Why should people buy in to what's getting built right now and maybe is being kept a secret with the Syracuse football team?
I think you look at the people. I think a great coaching staff has been built here. Guys with a lot of experience, guys who've been in the NFL, have been at other successful college schools. And then the players that we brought in, I think, like I said, anytime you get a new head coach, usually the best players leave and go to a different school, but all the best players came back. And then the portal class we brought in, I think is extremely strong, and guys that have experience, guys that played a lot of football. And I think when you mix that with, a lot of guys who are hungry to go out and prove themselves right, that's a mix for success.
What do you hope to get out of this experience? Just wondering at Syracuse, Kyle.
Yeah, I think already it's off to a great start. I want to come here and win in as many games as possible and put the best product of not only myself, but the team out on the field. And I feel like the coaches have definitely been allowing me to do that. Coach Nixon's been great having, open dialogue about what I like in the offense. And I think at the end of the day, everybody is here to win and everybody's here to produce and then ultimately, get to the next level, which is the NFL.
Well, Kyle, hey, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much, and good luck on this new chapter at Syracuse.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it.
You got it. There he is, Kyle McCord, joining us on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. This portion of the show is brought to you by Wesley Financial. Stuck in a timeshare and want out? Contact Wesley Financial Group now and get a free timeshare exit information kit at wesleyfinancialgroup.com. So appreciate his time, and he was a big-time talked-about player at Ohio State last year. And right, they had good moments against Notre Dame. They had a good moment against Penn State. But where that school is at right now from where they were, they have fallen off. Where they're still one of the best teams in the country, right? When you look at the rankings and you see the way that they're talked about. However, against Michigan, had the two interceptions. And that's how you get remembered. And I was trying to get some clarity on why the divorce happened between him and Ohio State. And they did bring another quarterback in, and it just seemed like it wasn't going to work out there anymore. So that's why I asked him what would it have really to take for him to be back at Ohio State. And when he says there's, you know, not one thing, there's nothing I could really infer from that. But it's now a new opportunity where he lands in Syracuse. And it is a smaller stage. You're still in the ACC, right? Solid football conference, but less attention on the Syracuse program. You get a coach who, Fran Brown, I hope that dude wins. That dude is just full of energy. And he's, you heard his introductory press conference. I played a little bit of it when he got introduced as the coach of Syracuse. That's just a dude that is a true leader of men. And he's a guy that's very easy to root for. And I'm elated that him and Elijah Robinson are back on the same coaching staff. But now it's a redemption moment for Kyle McCord because he was supposed to be the guy at Ohio State. It didn't work out. And now you're off to the next stop. And I'm curious how we're going to be talking about Kyle McCord a year from now. Because now you're kind of on the back burner. Now you're out of the spotlight. And it's how do you get yourself back into the spotlight and back into the conversation where the standard just naturally is lower. And I know the coaching staff won't like me saying this, but the standard is lower at a Syracuse compared to where it's at with what you could accomplish at Ohio State. So I wish him nothing but the best. And the transfer portal process for him was interesting. I thought he was going to Nebraska, and then the whole Dylan Raiola recruitment that got reopened where he's supposed to go to Georgia and then winds up at Nebraska. We know Dylan's going to be the guy there. So you go to a place where you could play in Syracuse, and I thought it was best for both parties. It was good for Fran Brown. It was good for Syracuse, right? Brings a bigger feel to the quarterback position. And for Kyle, it takes some of the pressure off of him. And we'll see if he could get to a level where he could be a dominant player and start to change the narrative that occurred since his departure from Ohio State. So appreciate his time and appreciate him joining us right here on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Okay, we will take a timeout. When we come on back, we'll go back to Caitlin Clark. And we've been talking a lot these past 3 weeks on why the women's tournament has been better than the men's tournament. We'll delve more into that and give you the reason why it's been better and why the women's game has more stars and more players that you could recognize than the men's game. And also, coming up 25 minutes from now, UConn star Donovan Klingon will join us as the Huskies are going back to the men's Final Four trying to defend their national championship.
Hey, everyone, this is Brett Boone. Would you know it? I've got a podcast going strong in our fourth year. Tune in as I sit down with my friends, some of the biggest names in sports, media, entertainment, for a lot of fun and in-depth conversations. As you know, baseball's been my life. It's been in the family for a long time, but it's a lot more than that here. It's sort of like taking a ride in a golf cart around a beautiful track. Join me every week for multiple episodes on the Brett Boone Podcast, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.